This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. This is episode 129 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof, live on television in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And we're doing something a little different. And we're recording this show live on blab.im.
And that's right, David. For those of you watching us on Blab, we should introduce ourselves. David and I produce a weekly audio podcast. It's called the UAV Digest. And we cover unmanned aerial vehicles and systems, and we really try to focus on the good uses of drones and how they can be safely integrated into the airspace. Now, for those of you who are listening to this later via the usual podcast feed, let me just take a second and describe what we're doing here on Blab. So very simply, Blab is a service where you create a show on the topic of your choosing. Up to four people with webcams can participate at any one time, and everybody else has a chat session that runs alongside the video. So people watching the show can jump in, become one of the four folks in the video seats when one of those open up. So this is a bit of an experiment, as you can tell if you've been watching us flounder a bit to get it started. David and I are going to start off like we usually do. We'd encourage those of you who are watching us live on Blab to make use of the chat function, talk amongst yourselves, but also feel free to jump into one of the video seats if you decide that the mood strikes you. So with that, David, what topics do we have lined up for this episode?
First, we're going to talk about anti-drone systems cropping up everywhere. More drone legislation from the state of California. FAA changes the rules for Washington, D.C. and radio-controlled drone clubs. And, of course, we're going to take topics of interest. Now, if you guys want to question us, if you go in the chat room and you do /Q in the chat, what will happen is that will bring up a question on our recording, and Max and I can get into it. But so with that, I guess we should get started. What do you think, Max?
That's right. Our first story comes from Uber Gizmo. Uber Gizmo tells us that Airbus has developed something they call a counter UAV system that uses sensors to detect drones around aircraft. David, the description of this kind of sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. The system spoofs the drone's control frequencies and takes over command, or the frequencies can be jammed to disable the drone. Now, we know that that the French, in over the last summer, when they had the incidents with the drones flying all over town, were using a counter UAV product that supposedly spoofed the sensors. And it sounds like this was the product they were using, maybe.
Yeah, the technology comes from Airbus Defense and Space. And this has, they say, a 5 to 10 kilometer range, which that's pretty significant, David. That I guess if you're talking about a high altitude situation or you know, a large drone, that maybe you need that kind of range, but it's, according to other reports, this is something that they've actually tested, right? It's more than just an idea.
Yeah, and they said they've been successfully tested in Airbus facilities in France and Germany. So you know, it's interesting that a military technology is sort of creeping into the civilian world as an anti-drone product. So one wonders what's left, you know. I mean, for every, so sooner or later, we're going to have drones jamming the anti-drone product, which will have to create another anti-drone product. So the drone can, thus the back and forth of common warfare occurs. So interesting technology that Airbus Defense is putting out to the non-military world.
And these kinds of approaches, I mean, they keep showing up over and over. More and more people, it seems. If you just look at the news this past week or so, there have just been so many examples of, you know, anti-drone kinds of activities, development, technologies, and so forth. The Guardian reported that a new UAV interceptor, it says, build as a net firing solution to rogue flying. Now, this is something that comes out of Michigan Technological University, and they've developed an octocopter that fires a net so it can capture rogue drones. And it doesn't just disable them. It captures them, and according to the video that we see, it flies away with them.
Yeah, it scoops them out of the sky. It's kind of like Gladiator, where they use the old fishing nets to disable the person. In this case, the fishing net is still attached to the drone, so it acts as a net, scoops up and takes the drone with it once the rogue drone is captured. It's kind of interesting that, well, I guess there's a safety factor involved. If it scoops a drone out of the sky, that makes it safer than if you just fire a net from the ground and basically the net compromises the drone and the drone comes crashing to the earth. This way, if you scoop it up and take it with you, you're preventing damage to anybody underneath the rogue drone. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, the video we saw a few weeks ago, David, from Japan, where a drone had a net to try to capture or disable other drones, that seemed like it was something that was kind of suspended beneath the drone, whereas this looks a little different. This is something that actually fires a net as far as 12 meters. So it's kind of shooting the net at the sort of offending drone, which it appears to be able to do pretty effectively.
Yeah, and but it does capture the drone. It's not shooting the net, and the net still attaches to the drone that's firing it. It's not just shooting the net and having that aircraft come crashing to the ground because the fishing net is disabled. So interesting technology. It's kind of frightening that we've got all of this anti-drone tech coming out as quick as the drones are. So we're we'd like to thank listener Peter, who sent the video for the DJI flame wheel equipped with the Excipio net gun. And so we've now got drones engaging each other in air to air.
David, maybe let's take a look at some of the questions in the chat, and then we can go back to sort of our show plan here for some of these other articles. But some interesting questions are coming up. I see from Don Sebastian. That's got to be Don, the pre-buy guy. Don says he's in North Carolina. They made their own drone rules. Why and is this legal? And this is something that has been coming up more and more, where local states, local governments and so forth have, well, they've observed problems with unmanned aerial vehicles and have taken it upon themselves to enact local legislation of some sort or another. And this raises the issue of a conflict, right, David, that exists between the, you know, the federal government, the FAA, and local governments.
Yeah, and the answer is the rule. Is it legal? I'm sure that will come out in a court of law in the next couple of years. The FAA says that they have the only authority to control the airspace, but local states and municipalities don't have that authority. The local states and municipalities think otherwise. So we're in the middle of a states' rights, federal rights rulings. Is North Carolina legal? We don't know. I mean, they've come up with some serious laws where about piloting and what you need to fly a UAV commercially. They're not so much doing about civilian or hobbyists doing it. But one of the things you need to think about is, and a lot of the other states' rules are coming out over privacy, which Max and I are both in agreement, I believe, where that privacy is really, the privacy rules are already out there. If you're using your drone to spy on your neighbor, that's a privacy violation, and you could probably prosecute them under already existing privacy laws. So you don't really need to make a privacy law about a UAV. But other regulations about flying, the FAA has sent out notification to the state saying that that's not your purveyance and your right to own your airspace. Yeah,
it comes down to this issue of airspace. The National Airspace System, that's the terminology used in the United States, that's regulated by the federal government, specifically the FAA. Now, local governments, you know, they say that, well, they're not so concerned about that. They're more concerned about reacting to the desires of their constituents and some of the problems they see. They want to take action right away. So, I mean, I think this is kind of bubbling. There is a question of what does the national airspace encompass? The FAA's viewpoint seems to be these days that it goes right down to, as it's popularly called, down to the blades of grass. There's other views that suggest that really the national airspace system begins at a greater altitude, maybe 400 feet, for example. But it's kind of an open issue, and the FAA doesn't think it's an open issue, but the states nevertheless are taking some kind of actions. In fact, David, we can jump ahead. We have an article that we've seen from. This is from the CBS Los Angeles affiliate. It's an article titled "Drone Legislation Would Require Owners to Buy Insurance and Get UAV, quote, License Plates." Now, this is something that is come from a California assemblyman, Mike Gatto, and he introduced something. I love the way they make these acronyms. It's called the Drone Registration / Omnibus Negligence Prevention Enactment Act, which is the Drone Act, if you leave out prevention, the Drone Act of 2016. And under this act, if it goes through, that it would require that drone operators obtain insurance policy, register their drones, and obtain some kind of either physical or electronic sort of license plate for drones. Now, Gatto says, and I'll quote him, his logic is that if cars have license plates and insurance, drones should have the equivalent so they can be properly identified and owners can be held financially responsible whenever injuries, interference, or property damage incurs. So it's another example. And we see a lot of these coming out of California, I think, David.
Yeah, and a lot of them get vetoed by the governor. I don't think he wants to enforce drone registrations. But ironically, what he's asking for is a California drone registration, and we now have the FAA asking for the same thing. Now, California is giving you it for a dollar, and the feds are giving it to you for $5 unless you hurry up and do it. As we're recording this, today is the 14th. And you have until the 19th to get your refund back for your $5. But this is one of those things where I'm sure that it'll end up ending up on the governor's desk. And he's quite able to veto drone laws and has done over the last year. So I don't know where California has the right to do this, but, you know, interesting that you're going to require insurance, which has not quite been a stipulation yet for hobbyists, but is a issue for someone who has a 333 or a federal commercial license or commercial authorization to fly their drone commercially. So interesting. Going back to the chat, Glenn had asked if shooting down a drone is legal. These are supposedly rogue drones, which means someone would be flying it illegally, and the law enforcement would be using it to capture that illegal flying drone. So they would have a legal right. It wouldn't be stealing it because basically the drone is being flown illegally anyway. So it might be impounded and you might have to pay a fine to get it back. But if it's the local law enforcement shooting down the other drone, Glenn, my gut reaction says that'll be perfectly legal.
But if it's, you know, you in your backyard and you observe some quadcopter flying over your property and you get out your shotgun and shoot it down, that's more likely to get you in some potentially serious trouble. Right. It could be a couple of issues. One is discharging a firearm. You know, where you live, that may be an issue. The other thing is that's shooting down an aircraft. Now, again, and this is going to come up again and again and again when you think about how the FAA views these things. They consider these to be aircraft. Shooting down an aircraft
is a federal offense.
Is a federal offense. And so you really don't want to be doing that. I know a lot of people have – well, I don't want to say a lot of people. I know several people have shot down – drones for that reason and have gotten themselves in a lot of serious trouble. So that's something that you don't want to do.
And Two Guys Talking said, what do you think about the proliferation of drones being used in television and film presentations? The most accurate, most ludicrous you've seen? Well, I guess the most ludicrous we saw was ABC or ESPN using that drone to cover the skiing event and having it almost take out the skier. Mm. I guess that's pretty ludicrous on that one. It's a really easy technology to use. Our local ABC affiliate has drones, channel Drone 6, and you're going to see it more and more over time. I mean, what do you think is your... In Connecticut, Max, are you seeing a lot of use of drone on your local news reporting?
Not so much, but there are people in Connecticut who have their Section 333 exemptions and are using them commercially for videotaping things like commercials or, you know, other productions. The ones that I know about are, you know, proficient pilots. They fly safely. They know what the limitations are. They know when to tell the director, you know, no, we're not going to do that because that's not safe, which apparently is not the kind of thing that directors of video productions are used to being told, that, you know, that there's a higher authority. So it's being done responsibly. You know, you develop an eye for these things, David. I think that a lot of commercials I see, a lot of movies that I see, sometimes it's not certain where the aerial photography has come from, but in many cases, to me anyway, it's pretty clear that, you know, a quadcopter or an octocopter or something of that sort has been used to do the filming, and it gets great images. It's a perspective that is either expensive to obtain with helicopters or other manned aircraft, but the results are, you know, very appealing, and I think we're going to see more and more of that. The thing of it is that it, you know, like all forms of flying, it needs to be done safely and responsibly.
Yeah, agreed. And one of the things that I liked was in last year's Winter Olympics, they were using drones in Italy to film the radical skiing, the ski jumps and stuff. And it was fantastic footage. You couldn't argue with that, and you couldn't do it with a helicopter. But it there's a safety involved, so I guess we'll see more of that over time.
Go ahead.
And before I do that, I want to answer Andy's question about if some clever person will already design a stealth UAV. They're already flying, as Micah said. We have lots of stealth UAVs. The RQ-170, which is a military UAV, is coated with RAM, which is stealth material, and it's shaped like a flying wing, which is stealth aspect. So, Andy, to answer your question, stealth UAVs are already flying. They're just the military kind. One thing you got to remember, if you've listened to a quadcopter, it's kind of hard to hide it. It's like a helicopter. There's very little you can do with the sound of tail rotors and rotors. And the sound of a buzzsaw like a quadcopter is kind of hard to make stealthy. Just from my technology point of view, stealth is unique, but it's hard to make octocopters and quadcopters that sound like chainsaws stealthy. You're going to hear them coming before you see them.
David, maybe we should take a look at some of the other news stories we've been following. One of them is this issue with the RC clubs and the drone clubs in the Washington, D.C. area. This has been making a lot of headlines lately. There's a new special flight rules area, the SFRA, and the FAA has decided that UAVs are now prohibited from flying within a 30-mile radius of Reagan National Airport. And that encompasses a lot of RC clubs, a lot of drone clubs who fly in that area. And it's causing kind of a bit of an uproar, I would say.
Yeah, originally there was a restricted flight zone that was much smaller around Reagan National, but evidently the FAA has broadened it. There is a no-fly zone for general aviation over Washington, D.C. I mean, you quite often hear the Coast Guard flying interceptions or the D.C. Air National Guard aircraft straying over the area, over the Washington, D.C. area. In this case, it's broadening it out to radio control and drone organizations. What was sort of surprising to me, Max, was the amount of clubs that flying UAVs in the D.C. area. I was sort of taken aback when they were saying 30 to 40 clubs, not just model airplane clubs, but strictly UAV clubs. So that was sort of it was like, wow, okay, I didn't realize the hobbyist sector was that organized, especially in that area. So that was one of the surprising things. And they're going to have to adapt, or the FAA is going to have to backtrack on the requirements. But I think I'd see the organizations adapting quicker than the FAA backtracking.
Yeah, and again, it's, you know, I keep saying this, it's an issue of the FAA saying, okay, we've got this special rules flight area and aircraft are prohibited unless they meet certain requirements, things like staying in contact with air traffic control by two-way radio. Most quadcopter pilots are not going to be able to satisfy that. The aircraft have to have a transponder. That's also a problem for your average quadcopter, I would say. But the FAA is kind of asserting themselves. You know, I kind of wonder if they aren't sort of laying the foundation for challenges to their position that they can regulate small drones in this way, laying that foundation that, you know, these are aircraft, and so time and again, you know, we consistently treat them as aircraft, as manned aircraft, for example, and don't draw a distinction, which, of course, is something that, well, I thought that the FAA was going to pursue kind of a different direction, which sort of, you know, bifurcated the situation and said, okay, below some small level, these are going to be model aircraft, and, you know, we don't regulate model aircraft. The thing is that the cutoff, as we see for registration, is that 250 grams, or roughly 0.55 pounds.
Two sticks of butter.
Two sticks of butter, which is, I mean, we're talking really small, small devices. So I don't know. You know, when we first started talking about this, David, a couple of years ago, we were, well, I think we were a little critical of the FAA for taking so long to get to the point where there were regulations and rules so people knew what they could operate under. And then we kind of switched, I think, as the FAA made some more progress and established the six UAS test sites and issued the NPRM for regulations that we're still, you know, waiting to see the result of, and, you know, implemented the registration system. I think we were kind of the opinion that the FAA was making progress. But, you know, now with this, you know, every little drone is an aircraft kind of perspective or position, I think it's not going the way I was hoping it would.
I suddenly feel like I feel like Monty Python. Every drone is an aircraft. You know, the paraphrase Monty Python. I mean, it makes it all encompassing. It makes it easy, but and in all fairness, Washington D.C. is the easiest no-fly zone to argue over. That, you know, we don't let real airplanes fly over it, so we're not going to let drones do it. So I mean, tough to argue that, but we'll have to follow up. So let's talk about some other news. My phone just timed out, so my document just disappeared. Guinness Book of World Records.
Oh, 100 yes.
100 drones flying it simultaneously. It must have been very noisy.
You would think so. This was in Germany. It was last November, and there were 100 drones equipped with LEDs. So this is a project that Intel and Ars Electronica Center in Austria have been working together. And so they were at an airfield near Hamburg, Germany, and flew these 100 drones in a pre-programmed formation. Part of what they're trying to do, I think, is sort of create some art with the you know, the lights and the exposure and so forth, and doing this to music. And they had the Guinness Book of World Records there on hand to verify, document the event. And so 100 drones is the new world record.
To answer your question about how does the FAA differentiate between a drone and an RC aircraft that's been flying for years, as of recently, they don't. Yeah. You've been flying a radio-controlled airplane that's 50 years old and is a two-channel aircraft. Well, guess what? That's officially an aircraft and needs to be registered.
Which, of course, has the AMA very, very upset.
Up in arms.
Yeah. You're a member of the AMA, David, as I recall. Anything new from that organization on registration? They'd wanted their members to hold off on registering their drones until the January 19th deadline.
And I think there's some protests, but they didn't jump on the bandwagon with the lawsuit that we talked about last week, that the gentleman was filing on behalf of all of us drone operators. Hmm. But and Max Trescott, our friend, also brings up the fact that in 2012, the Modernization Act, the FAA is operating under, RC planes were supposed to be exempt. But right now, that's not happening, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's not how the FAA is acting. Now, the FAA reauthorization bill is in process right now. It's in the U.S. Congress right now. And I haven't heard anything about conversations in the Congress regarding this issue. It's important for people to realize that, you know, by and large, the FAA doesn't just make this stuff up. at their own whim. The FAA operates under the
despite the perception that they do.
Yes, yes. They operate under the guidance of Congress, and the latest such legislation is this 2012 Modernization and Reform Act that also funded the FAA. So again, I don't know what kind of conversations are going on in Congress. Given the state of Congress these days, who knows if there's even any productive conversations going on?
To answer your question, Joe, you brought up the question, is a remote-controlled airplane like a replica B-51 or Spitfire or Cessna 172 with an aftermarket camera on it now a drone? The answer to that is yes. With or without the camera, it's considered a aircraft, and aircraft need to be registered. Model aircraft are not being considered drones. Drones are being considered model aircraft, and model aircraft are considered aircraft now, so therefore they need to be registered. I hope that answers the question. The answer is, if it flies, you need to register it.
And if it's over 250 grams.
So it would have to be a really tiny P-51 to not qualify.
Yeah, for sure. David, we got some feedback from a few of our listeners. Maybe we can mention some of those.
Sure, absolutely.
Neil says that he just completed his first drone video with his Inspire 1 here in Brisbane, and he said he thought we'd like to have a look at it. So we have his video. It's called Try Drone Journey. It's on Vimeo. We'll put a link to this in the show notes. Folks who are watching this on Blab, you can find us at theuavdigest.com. And as this is episode, let's see, what episode is this, David?
129.
If you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, it's theuavdigest.com/129. And we'll have a link to Neil's video. Great example of, you know, this is the first try at a video from his Inspire 1. And so some really interesting looking geography around this site. But, you know, one thing that's clear is that this is not anywhere near any population or any people. This is a fairly remote looking site, which is a good place to learn to fly. Yeah, exactly.
So last week we talked about the new app from the FAA, Before You Fly, which you can download on your Android and your iPhone. And we talked last week about it laughing at me when I brought it up at home and saying, what are you nuts, considering I live less than a quarter of a mile from the end of a runway of Philadelphia International Airport. But Nick sent in his comments, and he had pros and some cons. His pros was it was fuzzy before on how 5 miles from an airport is defined exactly. My house is outside of Class C airspace from the service, but just under 5 miles north from the tip of runway 36R. This app clears it up by showing the 5 miles is from the center of the airport, not from any part of the airport property, which is kind of interesting because, like, the center of Philadelphia International Airport for me is about 2.5 miles. And I still wonder what the center of the airport is, the center of the terminal, the center, the mid span of the runway. That's kind of interesting. Con is he didn't like that they have the traditional quote, government can do no wrong disclaimer, stating the info in the app is not the full picture of whether your flight is legal. It would be nice to have some definitive source. And he brought up the disclaimer, and but we do recommend you go out and look at it. And maybe this would be a good point to bring in Mr. Trescott, if you'd like, because you had some feedback for us about this also. You want to jump on there, Max? T? I like this. Max Trescott, are you there?
Looks like he's coming in. There he is.
Hey, there he is. Now you can give your slap to Max and I on in person.
No, it was just a minor point. You had said in last week's episode
that only towered airports did you have to make a notification. And I pointed out that actually the rules are that you have to notify the airport and the tower, regardless of whether it's a towered airport or not. So basically, we've got about 600 towered airports here in the U.S., about 6,000 airports total. So that means 90% of them don't have controlled towers. So you have to notify regardless of whether it has a tower or not, per the FAA rules. In the case of a towered airport, you have to make two phone calls. So you're calling not just the airport operator, which is usually a city or a county, but you also have to call a control tower as well.
What about,
and I said corrected.
What about heliports? When I loaded up the Before You Fly app here in Connecticut, I was, well, surprised, I would say shocked, to see the number of heliports that are around. And you draw 5 mile circles around each heliport, and that covers, it looks like, you know, 2/3 at least, if not 3/4 of the state.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I could imagine that, you know, the FAA tends to try and extend their reach, I think, as much as possible. So their interpretation might be, heck yeah, it's an airport, but I don't know for sure. I mean, you can certainly argue that the activity around a heliport is a lot more condensed and, you know, hardly extends 5 miles out. So who knows? I'm sure that's a ruling we'll hear in the future sometime.
I like Don Sebastian's comment here in the chat where he said that he's also done the Before You Fly app, apparently, and one of the airports is a farmer's dirt strip.
Yeah.
And Mark also chimed in and said Class B rings measure from the center of the runways, which is interesting. So I'm assuming Class C airspace would also do that. If that's the measurement for what the FAA is using.
Yeah, generally they try and pick some geographic center. So if you have a number of different runways, they're looking at a point that's kind of at the, you know, as close to the center of where all those runways are located. And you could find a specific, you know, set of GPS coordinates for the center for any airport. And it's going to be pretty close to the kind of the centroid of all the runways and taxiways.
Well, I like pretty much what the FAA is intending to accomplish with this app. I think it's good to bring awareness to flyers of drones, what's around them, what kind of manned aircraft exists around them. I mean, the bottom line is we all want a safe coexistence. But, you know, I thought originally that we were going to have some kind of a system where below 400 feet, say, that, you know, you'd be able to fly your drones and not have to worry too much about it unless you were really close to, you know, to an airport. But it doesn't appear that that's the way the FAA is looking at this. Any altitude is something that they want to, you know, keep this kind of separation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it is kind of odd that, you know, essentially if you're within, say you're 4.5 miles away from the airport and your drone is 10 feet in the air, technically you got to make that notification. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but, you know, that's kind of the way things stand right now.
Yeah.
I'm still going to violate the law and bounce my quad off the walls in the house without notifying anybody.
And as your lawyer, I'll be happy to defend you in court if you get hold of
me. I mean, if my little quad is going to be that much of a danger in the house, well, with me flying it, that's true. But so it's kind of interesting.
But inside is okay, right? Inside, flying inside, indoors is okay. The FAA doesn't care if you're flying indoors.
It is. The only notification I have to make when I fly indoors is my cat because it hates the drones.
So for those guys out in the chat rooms, should we keep doing this? What do you think?
Yeah, give us some feedback. This is, as we said at the beginning, this is kind of an experiment for us. We've actually kind of deviated from the show plan we had in mind to a certain extent, but I think it was a good thing to do. I think the feedback, the questions, there's certainly a lot of other questions in the chat room that we could have easily addressed. So, yeah, what do you think? Is this working? Something you'd want to continue to do? I don't know, David, if this would become the prime format for the UAV Digest.
No, I agreed. And especially if we have a guest on, I'd rather us go back to our old format. But maybe If we did this once, well, Mike is reading my mind, maybe once a month we could get on and make it all about you guys.
Yeah, I like that idea, and just take opinions, questions from folks watching this.
And when you go to publish the the podcast, you could still do edits. For example, you could use this as the rough cut and still do a an edited version that gets posted online.
Yeah, I think this rough cut may become the posted version for this week. And I think, if anybody else would like to, I think we'll wrap up pretty soon here, but if anyone else would like to jump in, do we have an open seat there, David?
We do.
Okay. All you have to do to jump in is just click the open seat. And as long as your browser is set up to, use the webcam, you should pop right in.
So this kind of looks like the Brady Bunch. Which parent are you, Max?
I don't know.
Here's a story about a man named Max. Well, which Max?
Yeah. I'll just kind of look over here, and you can look.
There we go.
You look. Well, yeah. I got to look down and.
All right.
All right. If nobody's joining in, we should probably. Oh, wait a minute. Here we go.
Here comes two guys talking.
Talking.
There we go. Hello.
How you doing, guys?
We're great. How are you?
I'm excellent. I have been following you secretly, lurking for probably, 100 or so shows, and you guys really, you trip my trigger because especially programs like this. I am very involved in drone technology. And that I love, I love the views that it affords. But more importantly, I like that it offers, especially now, the layman, the views that it offers. Because you can now walk in and for between $500 and $800, you can walk out with something that you can mount a camera to and get reasonably excellent video.
Yeah.
And it is, everybody talks about those game-changing moments inside of technology. And we've had GoPro cameras for a long time, and we've had quadcopters for a long time. But merging those two things together, but into a commercial level quality so that people can utilize them, that's only just now happening at the hands of anybody.
Yes.
And I think that's tremendous, and that's what got me. I saw the word UAV, and I'm like, I've got another program where we're going to be talking about drones. It's way more conspiracy theory-based, but
okay.
It is drones and getting on a couple of experts. I think would be outstanding. And so I came to listen to you, to see your banter, to see the chemistry. It's all there. And what I think Blab offers you, it offers something very much that I want to get out of it as well. Inside of Two Guys Talking Everything, we tend to use one episode every season, every 6 months, to gather and then focus on feedback from everybody.
Hmm.
It's a very interesting format. It allows for another program that we can lay to the sponsors and say, look, here are the people that we love to listen to and hear from, and they're all hearing your ads. It's a great little added benefit. This, however, is the game changer technology for us at Two Guys Talking, because it instantly allows us to, even if all we did was have this open and have people chatting and never open up a seat or ever refer to it, all of those comments, those all can become letters that can be read and responded to inside of the All Fan Input section.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can do exactly what we're doing now, where this is kind of an auxiliary piece of what happens inside of a program. And then that can be offered either offline via web link, or it can be incorporated as its own standalone item on a website inside of some sort of a paid for package. So it's excellent. And the models, I think about Blab and what it does, especially watching you guys do it. It's extraordinary. It instantly puts a face. You guys now know that I am Mike Wilkerson and I am Two Guys Talking. It's 27 different programs, but I'm the Two Guys Talking guy.
Yes, yes. It's a really different kind of a format, and it's really powerful. As a longtime podcaster since 2008, it's really strange for me to be seeing myself as I'm talking. I always said I have face for radio, and I think I'm demonstrating that.
Yeah. Sprint has been my longest sponsor for now 11 years inside of the podcasting circles, and bringing this, I'm a former professional sign language interpreter for the deaf.
Hmm.
And so this technology with these four HD cameras allowing me to use sign language quickly, rapidly, smoothly inside the picture screen. This is the game changer, guys.
Yes.
This is the game changer.
Yeah, that I think those are great comments, and I think this is something that we'll want to try to continue to explore. We're kind of newbies at not kind of we are absolute newbies at Blab, and we had a little trouble getting started. But
something else that I know you guys will love because you're super homeschool techies like I am is that the Blab folks will saunter in here.
Yes.
They will eventually arrive here. There was a Blab 2 weeks ago on Saturday, and it's what solidified me to the platform. Just talking about features and talking about things, and in walks the guy that started the thing. And I'm like, okay, interesting. Except that he opens up 7 or 8 different features that we don't have yet and shows them to everybody and then gets feedback them instantly inside of the chat room.
Wow.
Yeah. Sign me up. I'm behind that guy because awesome. He gets it. Yeah. He totally gets it.
Now, are you flying drones yourself, or are you just interested in the technology?
You know, the only thing I've done with drones is I'm also a videographer. And what we did for a city not too far from St. Louis, where I originate, is we recorded where all of the stuff goes after you go to the bathroom. And what they wanted to do is they wanted to film the process from the start. They took a dollar bill and they dropped it in the toilet, flushed it down the toilet. And then you follow the dollar bill through the streams of pipes and where it goes. And the last frame of it is the chief of police is the guy that commissioned me for it. And the chief of police had a drone. And I'm like, is that a drone? And he goes, yeah, that's a drone. I go, what do you use that for? And he goes, I don't know. And so I said, well, I'll tell you what, how about this last shot? You got the host and you got the tech guy that runs the it's not reclamation outpost. It's where all the wastewater goes. Wastewater treatment plant.
That's the sewage plant. Yeah.
It's the sewage plant. The guy that runs that facility, it's him and then the host, this cute little girl, and they both wave and say, remember, come back next time where you can follow the money. And as they go, follow the money, that's when the drone goes, and now you're, I don't even know how high it was. It was extraordinary.
Yeah,
amazing technology, and that it fits right in. You lilt the music over the end. It is exactly what we needed at the end.
Yeah,
that got me interested in drones, and then that being involved in entertainment is what got me involved in what drones are doing now in technology, what you see in Hollywood, but then also how they're helping to propel that platform.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's bringing it to it's raising the bar in terms of what it can deliver to viewers. There's other industries as well. Dave and I have talked about many of them. The precision agriculture, you know, there's an industry that's just, you know, busting, you know, waiting for, you know, the okay or the, you know, the approval to do a lot of things that would really impact, you know, the farming community. That's one.
And inspections, pipe inspections. We actually have a friend that's working on a drone for pipe inspections to run so they could chase the dollar bill with the drone through the pipes. So as well as tower inspections for electrical towers, et cetera. So there's a lot out there.
That you guys are out on the periphery talking about things like that. That's what also interests me as a podcaster. A lot of people say, what is podcasting? And I always go to it's captured perspective. And you guys are, again, you're way out on the edge of tech stuff that people don't generally talk about. And you guys are a perfect sample of why I podcast and help other people podcast, because I want your perspective. I want you guys leaving the legacy of that tech and that technology that you guys not only know, but you guys have that as it's the back of your hand. And listening to people like you talking as involved as you can and as passionately as you can. That's why I podcast, really.
There you go. Yeah, you're very kind. Thank you for your compliments.
Sure, no problem. Guys, great show, and I'm going to jump out of the seat, but thank you again for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for dropping by.
Last thing, you can take one of my friends that's a podcaster. I quote her. She said, podcasts are where opinions go to last forever.
Yes, and skill sets. That's how I've sold a podcast studio professionally. I have a 900-square-foot facility in St. Louis, and that's what I do. I go and I find people with unique skill sets and trades, and I find ways to get podcasts onto their website to help extend their legacy, to provide a 24/7, 365 presentation, so that even while you're sleeping, your podcast is helping foster your skill set.
Yeah.
That's what podcasts are supposed to do.
Good, good. And you're at Two Guys Talking guystalking.com, probably.
I'm the number two, guystalking.com. Yes, sir.
Very good. Thanks again.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, David, I think it's about time to wrap this up. What do you say?
I agree. I think we should wrap it up. This is going to run a little long, but this was a novel experiment. I'd like to thank our guest, Max Trescott, for chiming in. I guess you don't qualify as a guest. You aren't sort of, you anymore. You're sort of a
member of the community.
Co-host.
Yeah,
I like to think I'm part of the family.
Yes, absolutely. That's what we that's how we consider you. So we want to thank you all for listening. This has been the UAV Digest. You can find us again at the UAVDigest.com. Our weekly show is 30 minutes, so this is a little bit longer. I invite you to take a listen there. And we're kind of all over social media as well. David, you want to tell people where they can find us online?
Sure. You can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest, and of course on Facebook at UAV Digest or facebook.com/UAV Digest. You can support the podcast in multiple ways. You can support our podcast by leaving a feedback on iTunes or Stitcher. That way other people can find us via the podcast and eventually migrate over here to Blab. You can support us by buying some merch at cafepress.com/the UAV Digest, or you can become a patron of the show at patreon.com/the UAV Digest. And you know, all of the links can be found on with the show notes at theuavdigest.com. So I guess with this, I should say it's David in Philly signing off.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for watching and listening.